I'm Tom Schultz, host of Voices of Montana. Thanks for joining us for the podcast today, brought to you by Blackfoot Communications.
Does your home qualify for a $70 discount on your internet bill? Blackfoot Communications is proud to partner with the FCC to help ensure that households can afford the broadband necessary for work, school, healthcare, and more. For more information on this federal program and to see if your household qualifies for a discount on your internet service, visit goblackfoot.com/ACP. Connect to more with Blackfoot Communications.
Well, I'll be talking about something I know nothing about. What's new? The U.S. dollar, is it losing its status as the king of currencies? That's a headline here from In Business Magazine. The article discusses something I've kind of had my eye on a little bit, too. We see the value of gold rising. We see the value of the dollar rising tremendously as well. That was last year. The value of that compared to other currencies up 7.5%. But now we're seeing countries abandoning the dollar in terms of trading for energy and other resources. How will that affect America? How will that affect Montana? We talk about that in more detail today on Voices of Montana. Thanks again. Always contact us here at tom@voicesofmontana.com. I have a few minutes. We're going to be speaking with Ivan Drobnjak. I think I kind of got that right. The Croatian name. So there's some B's and some J's in there that I'm not sure what to do with. But Ivan is with a company called Bannockburn Global Forex. Forex, it stands for foreign exchange. And that's a capital markets trading firm which specializes in foreign currency, hedge analytics. What does that mean? Transaction processing. There's a world out there when it comes to finances that I just certainly don't understand. Let me tell you how I got kind of hooked up with Ivan, because the Montana World Trade Center is of course, centered in the University of Montana, and they've been around for almost that long too, right? 20 plus years. They're having a thing upcoming, an event coming in May that we might be there for, but certainly we'll talk about in more detail too. They just completed a survey, kind of a international trade and investment survey as well. Want to get some results off of that, so I was contacting them to just kind of set something up, and they weren't available. I wanted to talk because this news broke just a little while ago, maybe a couple of weeks, not even a couple of weeks. But folks have seen it coming for a long time, which is trade agreements with China and Brazil, which is what started it, in my mind. Well, I mean, at least me looking into it, where they decided to trade in their own currencies. Now, why is that such a big deal? I guess I'm not entirely sure why that is. This gentleman and this whole industry, I'm not entirely very much aware of, but currencies, like anything out there now, can just be traded left and right and left. And sometimes you win, sometimes you lose, because the value of those currencies will rise or fall compared to other currencies. It's just like almost any kind of commodity or other kind of trading article out there. Currencies are like that. For the longest time, I think that's 90%, I read somewhere, of the trade in the world was done through dollar currency. So in other words, companies and countries would trade their currencies for dollars. Say it was China and Brazil. They had, and mostly it's energy too. And this is where, you know, Ivan will be able to fill us in a lot more, because it's connected to the price of oil. It's locked in with the price of oil, so that when the dollar rises, the price of oil becomes more expensive for a lot of other countries out there. So, you know, again, trying to understand it all and how it makes sense, hopefully Ivan will put those pieces together for us, but no longer are they going to be trading in those dollar currencies. Now, does that make a big difference? I don't know if it makes a big difference to China and Brazil, but I think it could make a difference here to America. And this decline, I don't know how to put it exactly. The dollar is losing its status. You don't say that the dollar is necessarily losing its value, because it's been gaining in value financially. But certainly there's a political fallout to this as well. for the United States. And that's, you know, maybe not something that we can land on entirely as we keep our discussion to the finances here. But I think, well, I don't know. I think it's kind of going to be kind of big. And so I want to understand it more and maybe not in my mind. I'm reading information out there. Some say the greenback, if it's the dollar, it would be, if a weaker greenback would be welcomed by most around the world, because especially of last year, the high value of that, the falling interest rates are having had a very much an impact on this, and so the rising interest rates will also have a huge impact on this. We'll talk more and try to understand it more too. Again, it's part of that whole discussion as we look at international trade and international finances. There's a lot of discussion out there, and perhaps you're hearing it as well. We have addressed some of it here when it comes to digital currency, central bank digital currency. That's SBDC. There's movements across many states that, and I have to look into this too, and I'm sorry that I don't have more information for you here on it now, but some of those digital currencies, I got to try to get it right. Central bank, CB, I'm going to write it down here. SOC, central bank digital currency, CBDC. There was a warning out there, and I still got it and going to look into it, about states passing CBDC measures what are they calling it? Just without fully understanding what it is they're passing, and probably, maybe possibly, according to some of the critics there, opening the door to digital currency. I guess I have mixed feelings on digital currency, but mostly I am not in favor of it whatsoever. I don't think that we need to have a big brother government that has its hands all over our own bank accounts, can track all of our spending. It's just, government doesn't need to be that big. But there are certain, I think, precedents now falling into place that just people around the world, well, I know there's a large group of elites who would love to see that for certain reasons. But it just seems like even those in opposition to digital currency are realizing, are looking down the road there and seeing, wow, that's going to be our fate. And to some degree it is, but to what degree? How can we have digital currency, the convenience of, the security of, without having and still having our freedoms and maintaining our own autonomy over our own expenses? That's one of these discussions that we probably won't have in full. We'll talk about this, maybe talk about that, and we'll pass something, and we'll live with the consequences. I don't know. I hope we can do better when it comes to digital currency. But I'm not sure that's a big part of this. But, you know, we'll talk more with Ivan again kind of about what he does. But he has noted here when I was communicating with him, news lately, which impacts all the capital markets, including the currency markets, with the Fed pivot due to the banking crisis. And that is in reference to, we've talked about the Fed. I think they've been off track for a long time. They were slow to the party here when it came to rising rates and trying to handle this inflation. And then their action once they got to the party was, I think, aggressive, just large rate increases over small periods of time. I think that, I think they knew this, but that added to all of the upheaval that we have seen in our financial markets.
Does your home qualify for a $70 discount on your internet bill? Blackfoot Communications is proud to partner with the FCC to help ensure that households can afford the broadband necessary for work, school, healthcare, and more. For more information on this federal program and to see if your household qualifies for a discount on your internet service, visit goblackfoot.com/ACP. Connect to more with Blackfoot Communications.
And on the line and welcoming Ivan Drobnajak, Managing Director of Bannockburn Global Forex, to talk about this issue here. And good morning, Ivan. How are you doing, sir?
I am good. How are you, Dom?
I'm hanging in. Appreciate you being here. I have to admit, and I kind of talked about this earlier and set this up a little bit, but when I looked at your business, I didn't know businesses like you existed.
There's not a lot of us in the U.S.
Yeah.
Much more prevalent in Europe, where people are a bit more used to dealing with other currencies. And for example, in Europe, brokers, FX brokers like ourselves, command something like 20% of the daily volume, whereas in the U.S., we only account for about 4%.
Oh,
but
wow.
It's simply because people don't know about it. They don't know that they can go do their foreign currency transactions outside of their bank.
What advantages, and I know that's not what we're here to talk about, but I'm curious about it. What advantages does a Forex company like yourself then offer in the world of trade?
So we focus on kind of small and middle market commercial enterprises, and those typically get neglected at large banks. They don't get their own foreign exchange advisor, a strategist to talk to them about what the next central bank move is and what that might do to the exchange rates for their business if they have regular exposure. In addition, we offer exchange rates that are a lot better. And what most people don't realize is how much money there is in the exchange rate that gets applied to your transaction when you initiate it with a large bank. And that's where the money is. It's not in the international wire fee that they charge. It's in the exchange rate. That's where the banks make the most money.
Companies or investors are trading currencies like they're trading any other stock or bond out there nowadays. Is that true, or what's the nuance there?
Most of the companies we work with trade currencies for the needs of their business.
Okay.
So they're importing something from Canada and they need to pay their Canadian supplier 250,000 CADs. Or they are selling into Europe and their clients are paying them in euros. And they need to convert those funds to U.S. dollars or from U.S. dollars. And that's where that exchange rate exposure comes from. And that's where they can potentially save a boatload of money by saving on the exchange rate. Because if they come through us, for example, they don't have to open an account with us. We can ACH debit their account at Wells Fargo or B of A or J.P. Morgan. And then credit their vendor in Canada directly. And we'll charge them a lot less U.S. dollars than what their bank would charge them for the same transaction.
Oh, I get it. Yep. Let's get to this topic. And thank you again for that, Ivan. I appreciate that. Let's just get to the topic. Am I overly concerned about, and how do you say this? Because it's not the devaluation of the dollar, but the importance of the dollar is at play here.
Right. The term that has been thrown around here lately is the de-dollarization of the global economy. Huh. Previously, and still to this day, the U.S. dollar is a de facto standard that most countries use to value things for their own currency and when they're trading with others. So in this case that you're talking about, China and Brazil previously, when they were trading amongst themselves,
yep,
would convert everything from the Brazilian real into U.S. dollars and then from U.S. dollars to Chinese yuan and vice versa, Chinese yuan to U.S. dollars, U.S. dollars to Brazilian real when they would do bilateral trade. So there was an extra step there that they would take because of the safety and security of the U.S. dollar. This is simply how most countries trade. So with this move, and it is, I'm sure, part of long-term strategic plan of the Chinese Central Bank, PBOC, People's Bank of China, to continue pushing the yuan as currency that can be used for international settlements. In real terms, this really doesn't have that much of an impact on the U.S. dollar. It is simply a way to bypass an extra step when they're trading with each other. China is Brazil's largest trading partner. Chinese market is by far the largest for all the Brazil's exporters. And then as far as what Brazil imports, China is number one. And they have surpassed the U.S. a couple of years ago in this important measure. Now, like I said, this move simply changes the dynamic of the payment flow. But there have been steps taken previously by the Chinese central bank to make the yuan a more important factor in international trade.
You know what? I got to take a break here, just a news headline break, a couple of minutes, and come back. And I want to go into that because that's another part of the discussion here that I've been reading is that, you know, China is looking for, well, what the U.S. has, and that's global dominance. And they're making moves with their currency that could aid in that. We'll talk more with Ivan Drobnjak, a managing director of Bannock Burn Global Forex here.
Does your home qualify for a $70 discount on your internet bill? Blackfoot Communications is proud to partner with the FCC to help ensure that households can afford the broadband necessary for work, school, healthcare, and more. For more information on this federal program and to see if your household qualifies for a discount on your internet service, visit goblackfoot.com/ACP. Connect to more with Blackfoot Communications.
Lots to try and understand here. The U.S. dollar, as I guess Ivan Drobnjak had just said, the term is de-dollarization of the global economy. I get that too. And Ivan, thanks again for being here with Bannock Burn Global Forex, managing director there. So I guess going off of what we kind of talked about, it's not a real huge concern, I guess, that these countries are doing that. So are we making more of a big deal out of this than not?
Well, it's more of a political move than anything else. The Chinese yuan is only used still, even after this, in something like 2.2% of global transactions. The yuan is used to settle those. So 2.2% is simply not very much. And that's 2.2% out of 200%, because in each transaction, there are two currencies, which is why they add up to about 200% when you're talking about global trade. So, like I said, it's still a very, very small number, but it's more of the political significance of it, and kind of the Chinese are showing their hand in their long-term thinking. And if we know anything about China, is that they're very long-term strategic planners and thinkers. And this is obviously a priority in the administration over there at the moment, which they're looking at the next 10, 15 years and how this can impact them down the road. In addition, they work with Russia, and Russia has recently acquiesced and decided it was in their best interest to continue working in Chinese yuan directly with China because of their cutoff from the global financial systems. A lot of other countries have seen what the U.S. dominance in these global transaction systems has done to Russia, and they're trying to pivot and create alternatives should they ever find themselves in a similar situation. I know Indonesia here recently has announced that they're looking at a system of global payments that would potentially circumvent the Western-based one. So there's things going on behind the curtain to try to avoid Russia's fate should they ever fall out of favor by the Western powers.
I
was just going to say that China is the leader on this front, and with their creation of their central bank digital currency, the CBDCs, which has been a term that's been thrown around here lately in certain circles and even some online forums and conspiracy theory type things, but really the CBDC is simply a digital form of the Chinese yuan that can be settled via a blockchain type network that requires almost no time, no expense as far as the SWIFT network goes for their payments. And it can be a very effective tool should the yuan become more adopted.
Yeah, it also can be a weapon too, which is, I'm concerned about an entirely digital currency world, so to speak, for tracking and even for manipulation. So I guess I have some concerns about that. Do you think, and there's not enough time here to go into a ton, but do you think we'll be, this is subjective, totally digital, or do you think there'll be some variation down the road eventually?
Well, as far as what the alternative is to totally digital, I just tried to give my daughter $20 for giving the dog a bath the other day, and she looked at me like, "What's this? What am I going to do with the actual currency?" She's like, "Put it on my debit card so I can actually spend it, and I don't have to worry about any of that other stuff."
Yeah.
As far as the coming generations, I think that kind of answers it. They are fully digital. They are very well versed in all of that.
Wait until you go. I don't have time here. I see what you spent that on. Let's have a talk. That might change your mind too. Back with more in a bit.
Voices of Montana continues right after this.
Does your home qualify for a $70 discount on your internet bill? Blackfoot Communications is proud to partner with the FCC to help ensure that households can afford the broadband necessary for work, school, healthcare, and more. For more information on this federal program and to see if your household qualifies for a discount on your internet service, visit goblackfoot.com/ACP. Connect to more with Blackfoot Communications.
Thanks for being here. We are talking today about, I guess it's hard for me to even really understand the all the complexities when it comes to finances and trade currency. When I look at this, my jaw just goes, wow. The amount of daily trading volume for foreign exchange, FX market, that's the currency markets, about $7.5 trillion a day. In 2022. That is real, real heavy trading. We're with Ivan Drobniak, Managing Director of Bannockburn Global Forex, an expert in capital markets trading and specializing in foreign currency advocacy, or advisory, I should say. Ivan, thank you. I appreciate that. I appreciate you being here. What does the effective interest rate? I want to get right into that too. I know we talked about the value of dollar, and I see headlines, U.S. dollar loses value for third straight week as quarter one comes to an end. Let's not get confused, right? This is not the value of the dollar we're talking about. We're talking about the dollar as a trade currency. Are they tied? But I guess the biggest thing is, you mentioned that the Fed has pivoted when it comes to interest rates, and I guess the markets are still settling through that?
Yes. There's several different ways this monetary cycle could have ended. And when you say dollar lost value for the third straight week at the end of Q1, that is correct. But what's missed there is that dollar absolutely dominated in 2022.
Yeah.
When the Fed had the tools and kept raising interest rates to fight inflation, as opposed to the other economies, our trading partners and other currencies, that as you raise rates, the value of your currency goes up. And by value, I mean direct value, not intrinsic value. The intrinsic value of the U.S. dollar is huge worldwide. Mm-hmm. Again, it's the most stable currency. It's the one everybody uses to trade bilaterally. It's the one used for oil trading. So intrinsic value, I mean, that doesn't really impact it. But the actual value, and again, a strong dollar is not necessarily in our best interest all the time. The importers prefer a strong dollar. The exporters prefer a weak dollar because it makes their product a little bit cheaper internationally. And companies are able to pay for it and sell it a little bit more competitively compared to the competition from other countries. So with the Fed pivot here recently, like I say, that monetary cycle could have ended any different number of ways. The labor market being one of them, but that has been extremely resilient. The labor market is, the unemployment rate is still unbelievable.
Yeah.
The weekly, the monthly report is coming out at the end of this week, the non-farm payroll. We'll see again kind of what happened in March. Everybody's expecting a slightly softer number, which is not out of the realm of possibility given what we've seen in the economy, in the shocks of the economy in the last 3 weeks. So it wasn't the labor market. It's not the inflation. It hasn't gone down enough yet for the Fed to pivot. But it was these systematic risks in the financial sector that have caused a lot of consternation. And with the lending was already slowing down at the banks. It was already down quite a bit even before this shock. But after this shock, from what I hear on the street these days, the lending has almost come to a halt. And the balances of the reverse repo facility that the Fed provides have gone through the roof. So the banks are stashing their cash at the Fed, earning 4.8%, and they're not using that money to lend to the economy. So that in itself will be a lever that in that will be deflationary in nature, meaning there will be a lot less lending, it will be a lot tighter, and simply by that, the growth is going to cool and inflation is going to start coming down. So Fed is probably looking at that. And even though the Powell recently, when he testified again, when he gave his speech, he reiterated that they're committed to 2% inflation. That's the target. That's what they're going to go towards. The market is still kind of calling his bluff and still pricing in that there will be no more interest rate bumps after this last one here in March that was delivered, and is actually pricing two interest rate cuts of a quarter point each before the end of the year. So thinking that the weakness in the U.S. economy is going to force Fed's hand to do that. Now, the interest rates directly impact the value of the U.S. dollar against the other currencies. So recently, in the last few days, yesterday there was some disappointing economic data. Two-year yield of the U.S. Treasury dropped by 14 basis points, and in turn, the U.S. dollar lost value against most currencies. Euro went up to almost 110. It was at 109. The sterling is one of the best performers. The pound, British pound sterling, I should say. I shouldn't just say sterling. Is up to almost 125, a level it has not seen in a long, long, long time. The Canadian dollar was down to 134. Again, that one's quoted inverted, so compared to the euro and the pound. But all of these factors kind of to point out that the currency markets are not like other capital markets. They don't, like equity markets over the course of 10 years, generally go in one direction, right? The currency markets don't. They depend on the next political upheaval or natural disaster or a war that nobody was really predicting. And that's why it's so hard to try to guess and forecast currency markets, because they're so efficient. You said 7.5 trillion gets traded every day, and they trade 5.5 days a week. 5.5 days a week, because when New York goes home on a Friday at 5 p.m., that's generally the end of the FX trading time until our Sunday morning when Australia comes in for their Monday morning. That's when the trading starts again. So it trades 24 hours a day, 5.5 days a week. It's the most efficient capital market in the world, meaning anything you think you know about the currencies and are trying to trade on trying to guess which way it's going to go, all of that has already been priced in.
Yeah.
So I would highly discourage anybody from trading currencies for profit, because I've been in this business for 15 years. And when I see those late night infomercials about become a millionaire, trade Forex, I mean, it boils my blood a little bit, because I know how difficult it is, and I'm bombarded every day by economic analysis and some of the smartest people in the world about this stuff, and they're all over the place. So being right in this business, when you forecast currencies, being right 51% of the time is a huge achievement. Never mind any more than that.
Yeah. Oh, I can appreciate that too. I'm going to ask this question. It goes back to the safety and security, and I know how important that is, because you don't want to, as an investor, invest into a country that is going to fall apart and take your investment as their own. That can happen. That threat is still existing in China. That threat still exists for Russia. Those are, you know, these major powers, and that threat still exists. What's the move toward a global currency? Are we going to see, and I know it's subjective, but you're probably part of discussions that could fill us in on whether we're leaning that way or not.
No, I think as far as the global currency goes, U.S. dollar is it. And at the height of its power, of its intrinsic value, how long we stay at this height, I believe for a long while. Mm. I don't really see a whole lot on the horizon that would dethrone the U.S. dollar as the global reserve currency. Some would argue maybe some crypto like Bitcoin that is not controlled by any one country. But again, that market is still relatively small. And I feel like if we wanted to take it down, if the U.S. wanted to take down the Bitcoin network, eventually it could. Now, it would require some serious supercomputers and power. But again, it's doable. And I don't see that really as a threat. But anything other than that, I mean, yeah, China is working towards becoming a world leader and a competing superpower to the U.S. because they realize, and a lot of other countries realize, it's not necessarily in their best interest to have one country be in charge of everything. However, how many European countries do you really see using yuan to settle their trades? I personally don't. Not anytime soon, not in the next generation or two. So it's going to be a long while before the U.S. dollar is dethroned as the world reserve currency. And as far as the global currency, I feel like that is where we are currently, and that's where we're going to be for a long time to come. As far as safety and security, the other aspect that you mentioned of your investment in other countries, that really goes beyond the monetary risks. It goes into political risk, mm-hmm. and that is an assessment that each company should make and talk to their there's global trade insurance providers who can actually underwrite political risk, that you can take out an insurance policy against your assets being expatriated and taken control of by the government. Now, I imagine in Russia, these policies are currently non-existent because it's such high risk. No insurance company would take that on. But yeah. If you're looking at other markets like Brazil or China or Vietnam, which again have governments that are relatively capital markets friendly, but at the same time, you never know what's going to come down the pike. If China invades Taiwan in the next 2, 3, 4 years, how is the world going to turn toward them, and what are they going to do with all the assets of Western companies that exist in China? So it's a bit of a rhetorical question and rhetorical answer to it at the same time. It's something that I can't predict.
Yeah. Well, the global economy is such that you, like you say, you've been making a lot of mistakes if you start to try to figure that out. But I mean, the fact that we're intertwined is both a plus and a minus in some ways. I just want to finish up with this conflict, Russia-Ukraine. Have we seen a settling in of trade practices? Or is there still that high level of uncertainty that makes everything a gamble?
If anything, it has raised the level of uncertainty of global trade, and I have not seen it come down. Those are still kind of peaking and staying where they are. The Russian ruble is, after the initial bump, it has kind of settled now down, and people are taking more of an understanding of what these long-term economic sanction impact is going to be on Russia. There's a headline this morning in the Wall Street Journal about they don't even have parts to service their airplanes for their domestic flights anymore. So I think that a lot of that is still continuing to unravel, and there's a lot of pressures both ways. Again, you're hoping somebody like Putin is not backed into a corner, because you never know what somebody's going to do when they're backed into a corner completely. So you have to be very tactical about how you approach all these levers that you pull and press on when you try to achieve the result that you're trying to achieve. All that to say, all of this is much more complicated than even I can understand. So that's all I'm asking people to do, is just kind of keep an open mind. And at the same time, we're at the, as far as the world conflict goes, Tom, we're at the absolute lows. So in the history of the world, this is the safest time to be living in. We have shelter, we have food, we have everything we need. So we're always looking for things to worry about. And I would argue that we are very lucky in that regard.
Oh, I would not disagree with you either. Let me ask one more question here, and sorry about that. Supply chain. Have we seen, again, sort of the same question with the markets, an understanding and a settling in of how to operate without supply chain liabilities?
And supply chain has caught up.
Okay.
Based on my conversations with our clients, we have about 2,000 commercial clients across the country. The supply chains have caught up, and the demand has dropped significantly. And that's why the supply chains have caught up. And the shipping of goods, the container of goods going to Europe, I mean, after skyrocketing last year to something like over $25,000 a container, is now back to below $7,000-$8,000 a container. Like I said, the clients we talked to, their inventories have caught up. Now they're working on making sure that the demand side of things doesn't drop off of a cliff, which is that recession that we're kind of potentially staring towards. But at the same time, it's been talked about for about a year and a half now, and it hasn't come to materialize. Again, the labor market's still very resilient despite all the tech layoffs. I tend to, in this country, it pays to be an optimist. And I am an optimist.
Me too.
I'm
glad to hear that. I'm very glad to hear that. And I take that for what it's worth too. Ivan Drobniak, a managing director. It's Bannock, B-A-N-N-O-C-K, Burn, B-U-R-N, global.com. Really appreciate the information, Ivan. And getting a chance to meet you. And we'll chat down the road. Thank you, sir.
Thanks, Tom. Thanks for having me.